Go on, admit it. You didn't think it was going to happen. Of course it would. Welcome to 2016's first Midweek Drive Morning Edition. And a hearty good morning to the Director of Communications at the University of Lincoln. Of course, it's Ellie Sample. Good morning, Ellie. How are you?
Good morning. I'm fine. How are you, Alex?
Very good indeed, and delighted to have us. Also, welcome to the programme. Ace graduate, of course, from the School of Journalism. Now, of course, one of the Gibraltarian Chronicle's finest. That would be Gabriella Peralta. How are you, Gabriella?
Thank you.
Excellent. And of course, as we know, Frodo, which is, of course, your little pet doggy, is quiet. Shh. Keep quiet. We don't want to disturb Frodo.
Yes,
very important.
Asleep, thank God. So he won't be as bothered today, hopefully.
You never know. It's just a delightful...
He might wake up. You don't know.
Exactly. Ellie has even brought gifts to the show today, and virtually, Gabriella, I'm sort of about to pass over an official Curtis cake to your good self. So across the Gibraltarian Airways, it'll probably wing its way to you in some way, shape or form. Or maybe not. We'll just have to wait until you actually return. Anyway, what's the weather like in Gibraltar, Gabby, before we actually start talking about the weather in Lincoln?
Well, I can't really complain that it's cold compared to the UK, but I still do. Yeah, it's okay today. Not too bad.
Okay, well,
in Lincoln, the past couple of days, but not too bad.
In Lincoln, it's a high of 6 degrees centigrade, lows of 2 degrees centigrade. A cloudy morning without breaks of rain. I'd almost say, Ellie, torrential rain, because not that I normally do traffic and travel, but for goodness sake, be careful out there.
It's terrifying out there, Alex. I really didn't think I was going to make it in today.
Well, you've got the power of the Midweek Drive Morning Edition sort of just beaming its sort of set, like an aura of safety around you from that point of view.
But thank you.
Even with that, for goodness sake, take care, whether you're actually in a car, an automobile, or even if you're on a cycling scenario. I still see people actually cycling without helmets. Never mind. It's going to be a cloudy morning, I'd say, with outbreaks of rain becoming drier and brighter and breezier in the afternoon. Ellie, let's move straight into some of the exciting news that's coming up as far as the University of Lincoln is actually concerned, because on Monday, Andrea Spiropoulos is going to be a guest lecturer at this very university in a free-to-attend event.
It is. It's true. And we're really, really exciting. She's coming in. She's going to be speaking to our nursing students and some of our health and social care students. But the public are invited in to join us. And also coming up, we've got the Poet Laureate, Caroline Duffy.
She's very nice as Caroline. We worked together actually on a World's Words Day that we actually held in Lincoln. In fact, it was a Hayes Festival, one-off Hayes Festival a few years ago. And she's a fine soul, basically.
She is one of the nicest people we work with, I have to say. I do agree. And so, so clever and talented.
She even occasionally does some poetry as well. It's amazing, really, Poet Laureate.
She writes books as well. I don't know if you know, I'm reading her fairy tales at the moment, which are absolutely fantastic. Fantastic. So, yes, if you do get the opportunity to come along on the 28th of January, I would strongly recommend it. She is absolutely fantastic.
Fantastic stuff. We'll be hearing more about that and a whole heap of other things because, of course, you're also responsible for the graduation ceremonies, are you not?
That's true. And the next one is on the 20th of January, and that's going to be a phantasmagorical event up at the Lincoln Cathedral. It's the best event of the year. I absolutely love them. It's a real pageant of finery.
And, of course, one of your team, of course, former Midweek Drive head herself, actually, Julie Corden, is somebody who actually coordinates that and does very well indeed.
She's just fantastic. She does a great job, yeah.
So, Gabriella, as my sort of throat continues to sort of need a little cough off microphone, which I'll do in a few seconds, would you like to actually have a few words with the legend that is Ellie Sample?
Yeah, of course.
Hi, Gabriella.
Hi. I would just really like to know, you know, all the work that goes into doing a graduation, because we turn up and we don't exactly think...
Yeah, exactly.
A
couple of years ago, Gabriella, you were there. It just happens, doesn't it?
That's really, that's really good that you think that, Gabriella, because it's a bit like a swan. We try and keep it looking serene on the surface, but underneath it, it is quite a challenge. There's so many elements to coordinate. You know, we'll have a roundabout. During the week of ceremonies, we have around about 15,000 visitors who come and attend. For the one day in January, it's slightly less. We have around 3,000 visitors who will come. And we have trumpeters, we have parents.
You've got Andrew David's riders to put together. does he have all the sort of right colour sweets in it? So it could be a nightmare.
He's such a challenge. I mean, gosh, I wouldn't like to tell you what he asked for last time.
Oh, my goodness.
But no, there's a huge amount that goes into it. And we try and make it the most special day of a student's life because obviously we're celebrating 3 or 4 years of study or 1 year of study, depending on whether or not you're doing a postgraduate programme. But we try and make it into something that you will will remember for the rest of your life. And I really hope it was like that for you, Gabriella.
No, yeah, it definitely was, actually. I just really liked the fact that we had, like, picnic tables. You could relax before you went in. I hadn't really seen that in other graduations I'd been to. So, yeah, I thought Lincoln was probably my favourite of the graduations.
Ooh, thank you. The other thing is...
It was my own graduation this time, so I was a bit biased.
No, and it's completely free. We do it all as part of the student's fee as well, which, strangely, a lot of most universities
don't. My old alma mater, no names, obviously University of London, but they charge quite extensively, but still, never mind.
No, but yes, it's a fantastic day, and the cathedral just makes it so special as well. And also going over into the castle, and we have the celebration marquee and a champagne reception, and we really try and make it special. And normally we have some really impressive honorary graduates who come through, so we've had some great people. I think in January, I'm racking my brains to think
it's a very special
coming.
Person. It's a very special person, that's all we can say.
That's all we can say.
Can't say anything else at this particular stage. Just, you know, it's not Gabriella, by the way. It's all coming together. Okay, Gabriella, what does your day entail? Because obviously in Gibraltar at present it's coming around to 8:30 past 9:00. There we are, time travelling already. Is it a case of a leisurely sort of stroll down to the Gibraltar Chronicle and decide to actually sort of do a few features on, you know, the excitement of Gibraltarian politics and so on? What's the day hold for your good self?
Today, I'm going to Supreme Court at 10.
The Supreme Courts?
Yeah, we don't have a Crown Court in Gibraltar. So basically, if it's just over the limits of the Magistrates Court, everything will go to the Supreme Court. Oh. We don't have the middleman. We're not big enough for it. Either I turn up to the Gibraltar Chronicle if there's nothing going on in courts,
mm-hmm.
or I turn up to the Supreme or Magistrates Court on a different... because I share it with another one of my colleagues at courts. We really focus on two Supreme Court courtrooms in Gibraltar and two in the Magistrates Court courtrooms. So,
and the good news, of course, with Gibraltar, you don't have to worry about sort of pretending you've got an H-bomb there, because you haven't. You know, it's important, you know, for those people sort of over in North Korea. Honestly, naughty North Koreans pretending they've got a bomb when they haven't, you know. Goodness sakes. It's just breathe. That's the important thing. Keep listening to the Midweek Drive Morning Edition. It'll calm you down. Gabriella, have you had a reasonably interesting telephonic link with us on the programme today?
Of course I have, thank you.
Excellent. Richard Fitzwilliams is coming up to talk about the New Year's Honours List. Ellie, I was shocked we didn't actually get Dame Ellie Sample for your good self. You know, it'll happen, I'm sure, but, you know, just
well,
one of those key things.
I think there were too many bankers, government officials.
Well, that's been said many a time, actually. We best not go there.
There wasn't room for me.
Very true. I disassociate myself from that sort of thing, exactly. So step aside from that whole side of things. But we'll find out what Richard's got to say about that. Plus, of course, his views on the upcoming BAFTAs and more. Ian Lennox should hopefully be joining us from Tyneside. Sarah Huntley is with us. And we're going to the University of Hertfordshire to speak to Professor Richard Wiseman, who's talking about the fear of change. Apparently, it's something which, particularly at this time of the year when we like to make new resolutions and so on, change is something that we all have difficulty coping with, and it's all a matter of mind over matter. Richard should actually know, before he became professor of psychology, he was a magician. There's the magician's circle. There's that line there. I take it, Gabriella, you will return then very shortly to the Midweek Drive Morning Edition in a couple of weeks' time or thereabouts?
Yes, of course, whenever you want me back.
Yay! There's the rain again.
Listen to the rhythm of the falling rain, telling me just what a fool I've been.
And a special good morning to Katie Griffison, who's just texted in to say hello. She's doing some SEO work. Well, she's starting a whole new exciting world in Birmingham, and why not indeed? And Jeff Thompson, of course, who anchors the breakfast show Tuesdays, Wednesdays and Fridays, and sometimes Mondays as well. In fact, he's been doing Thursdays while we haven't been here over the last sort of vacation. It's phenomenal, Ellie, really. I mean, the man's just a machine, really. But he's just popped in to say that there's a tailback on the A57 going halfway back to Saxelby. I don't quite know what the incident is, but presumably, well, maybe people are actually sort of not going as fast as perhaps we were worried they were going in the rain, because it's not safe and it's not sensible. Isn't that right, Richard Fitzwilliams?
I agree with you.
Mm. Now, Ellie was asking, how did we first get in contact with each other? And I seem to recall, Richard, we kind of connected via the delightful Sarah Chase, although our mutual sphere of contacts include, of course, the ace publicist Liz Brewer, Angela Riff, and many other sort of fine folk, before, of course, this wonderful relationship started a good few years ago now, and you started leading in so many marvellous, wondrous things, including, of course, one day, Ellie, he will be a guest speaker at the University of Lincoln, delivering his wonderful talk about how he's related to the mutiny on the Bounty people.
Oh, that would be fantastic.
Yes, you're absolutely right. It was Sarah. You're right, it was Sarah who put us in touch first.
There we are, you see. And after last night's prequel tease and so on to the delights of various other bits and pieces, I've just been sharing the shock that there wasn't a knighthood for yourself or indeed a Dame Ellie sample, etc. Ellie's line was basically there were too many bankers who were actually involved from that sort of point of view. She could well be right. Do you want to share a few more thoughts about the recent New Year Honours scenario, or indeed do you want to go straight into royal engagements, or would you like to go movie-wise? Which one would you like to pursue first, Richard?
Well, I would just like to say that the honours list, just to mention, they did have some absolutely splendid names in it. I mean, who could argue with Lord Darcy as an Order of Merit candidate, or indeed the priceless historian Sir Roy Strong has done so much for our museums, giving him a companion of honour. I mean, those are not the awards that were so controversial, and it's very curious that when one mistake, undoubted mistake, giving Lynn Homer a damehood, all the posts she's been associated with in the civil service have been putting it mildly, highly controversial. That tended to overshadow, certainly with the papers, the fact that so many, for example, from David Yellowo and OBE, Idris Elba and OBE as well, two excellent choices. We knew Barbara Windsor was going to become a dame, Damon Albarn getting an OBE, Matthew Bourne being a knight, and so on, and one could go on. The facts simply were that it is curious when you have a system that seems so much responsive, more responsive now, and when three quarters were given to those with links for philanthropy and community service, and yet the half women, and more women in the higher ranks, which is so important. And the concentration in the papers was, I mean, it was on one or two awards, and it was so negative. I thought it was an excellent list, but the civil service aspect of it does need to be looked at again.
Okay, Ellie, any thoughts? Did you feel that it was a bit biased? Or?
I felt it was really biased this year. I felt there was, surprisingly, there was a huge number of people linked with universities, which is good in many ways, but it seemed to be very much dominated by academics, people on TV, and also by people who worked in government, as you say. So we saw David Willetts get his baronhood, which, do you call it a baronhood? Baronet? Baronet?
Richard should know.
Yeah. No, I think it was a knighthood that he got. I mean, the thing is, there was a dissolution honours list, and we had headlines such as Lord Moat and Lady Nickers, for example, which wasn't very flattering. The facts simply were that
it's not going to go well with the coat of arms, is it, really, Lady Nickers?
I mean, for goodness sakes. You know, it was a newspaper take in it, but the fact is, if somebody has charged the taxpayer money for clearing his moat and it's been part of an MP's expensive scandal, it wasn't wise to include him. The fact were also there are eight committees plus a committee for the Parliamentary Services Committee who choose the nominees under a central committee. We know who they are because it used to be a very, very secretive system. And I was certainly not surprised that there were some choices of politicians. But my point overall, though, is that when you have 1,200 names, the vast majority of them were excellent choices and people we'd never heard of. I mean, those, as I say, linked to community service, philanthropy in one sort, one way or another. And also the very large number of people, this began with John Major, who could write into the ceremonial unit of the honor system, and who could suggest somebody who'd done something worthwhile. You write in and you have sponsors. I mean, I'm all for encouraging that aspect of the honours system.
There were a few surprises, though. I mean, you say about philanthropic services, but the founder of Pets at Home, Anthony Preston, he was listed for
philanthropic purposes.
Oh, my goodness.
Exactly.
It's too early. It's too early. But that surprised me, because Pets at Home, I don't know if you remember, they've been in the news on numerous occasions for not looking after animals.
Questionable, I think, issues, really.
Issues. So I was quite surprised to see someone like that nominated for philanthropy.
The individual honours, I mean, there are those who get them into the, I've checked, it was indeed Baron Willits, so he got a...
You don't mess with Ellie, Richard, that's the bottom line, really.
Oh, no, but I mean, in fact, they're always in these lists. I would say, why on earth hasn't, and I choose this example deliberately because there are those who would oppose the idea, but I mean, I believe David Beckham. It's ridiculous he's only had an OBE since 2003. Mm-hmm. The fact that he would fall into the so-called celebrity, in inverted commas, category. Mm-hmm. The word is so misused, it's ridiculous. It seems to me that not only 115 caps for England, not only the fact that he was UNICEF ambassador, not for charity, not only his involvement in the Olympics, there's something very, 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 very odd there. And the other... Why no one in broadcasting? Paxman, for example, has retired from Newsnight, surely in his time to...
And I would. John Snow turned his down, didn't he?
There have always been 4% who've done that. And quite interestingly, in 2003, a list of those who'd refused honours, I think it was between 1951 and 1999, some 250, and some interesting names, including Paul Scofield, for example, were published. And it's always been the case that there have been a few of those who don't approve of the system or would prefer a different form of honour. I mean, some in the gift, you know, of the monarch, others in the gift, so to speak, of the Prime Minister when advised. It is said the Prime Minister no longer adds names. I mean, there are those who want a clearer break between the politicians and the system. But the facts simply are, for me, that John Humphreys, he won't be less of an interrogator if he gets an award. He most certainly ought to do it. Why not Alan Rickman, Jeremy Irons, Matthew Williamson?
But we can't have prizes for everybody, Richard, can
we? No, these aren't everybody, and Judy Christie isn't everybody. I mean, she may have been offered one recently, and we haven't got a more up-to-date list, but I'm surprised at this. But we could always pick individuals whom we feel are worthier than others. I mean, we were always going to get Jacqueline Gold's chief executive of Ann Summers. I mean, the interest in that was obvious, but it does seem to me if somebody succeeds, and there were more women in the higher ranks. I think it was 38% were women, which is
It's just a shame that so many of them are celebrities, and there's a certain crassness to it, isn't it?
Perhaps they should go into Celebrity Big Brother, you know.
Exactly. Rather than be given a knighthood.
Exactly. Yeah,
I protest against the use of the word celebrity because it does seem to me that it means very, very little. And what we've started to do, would we call Sean Phillips a celebrity? No. Would we call Imelda Staunton a celebrity? No. One was a damehood, one was got a CBE. There are those involved in the campaign against Ebola. There were quite a large number who were honoured there. And we had a complete mix. A.P. McCoy became a knighthood. Martin Lewis, likewise. Now, Linton Crosby, if we could look at him just for a second, it does seem to me Labour ennobled their campaign director, Spencer Livermore. He's in the Lords. Now, it doesn't seem to me at all strange that the successful Conservative one became a knight. I mean, he masterminded the last election and Boris Johnson's two elections. He failed in the election before, but I mean, the facts are that he was successful, that Labour did it, and it doesn't seem to me that, although the name was leaked as Barbara Windsor's was, which is another point, there's a mole in the system.
I think it's a PR activity.
A PR mole
really,
in the system. Outrageous. Let's hold it momentarily there, folks, because we've got to come back to talk about the Danish girl and Joy, and possibly a royal
the Revenant
engagement.
Joy.
Do you want the Revenant or the Joy? It's entirely up to yourself.
The Revenant and Joy.
The Revenant and Joy. So no Danish girl then.
No Danish Girl. The Danish Girl will be next week. The Danish Girl's a remarkable film, and I expect it to score very, very well at the BAFTAs, the nominations I'm attending tomorrow when they're announced at BAFTA. And the facts are that it'll be very, very interesting to see, because, again, it's extremely close races this year.
We will hear more from your good self, Richard, after, of course, the newly honoured OBE for Damon Albarn and Blur. Good song, good show. Well done, Damon. It'll be heading off into a whole range of different directions, and I'm sure that Liam Gallagher will get something in the near future as well.
Blur won Oasis, not so far. And also, you'll be interested, Albarn is in Who's Who, and the Gallaghers haven't made it yet. Now, that's an inconsistency.
Splendid stuff. Ellie, would you like to share with us some of the wonderful names that are coming up to be part of the guest speaker list here at the University of Lincoln, many of which are open to, of course, the general public free of charge?
Yes, definitely. We've got Corenza Lewis, best known from Time Team, who recently joined the university from the University of Cambridge, and she'll be doing a public lecture in early March. Dallas Campbell as well, who I'm sure everyone's aware of. He's always on the telly talking about maths and physics and science, isn't he? He'll be here in April. We've also got, before both of them, Dame Fiona Reynolds, and she'll be here on the 23rd of February, and also Anne Cleves on the 2nd of February.
It's just a win-win situation, and hopefully in the very near future, I'm going to ensure you're put into email contact Richard Fitzwilliams.
I should love to, because Mutiny on the Bounty is a subject that I hope will fascinate those who come, because it is a remarkable story. There's been no mutiny in history where a captain and 18 loyalists have been cast adrift by mutineers in the way Bligh was, with the remarkable open boat voyage, and also Fletcher Christian becoming a legend. Absolutely riveting.
Because who are you related to, Richard?
I'm related distantly to Bligh through my great-grandmother. Her grandfather was Duncan Campbell, and his niece married Bligh, and it was under Campbell, who ran ships between Britain and Jamaica, that Bligh sailed when he was on half pay, and he captained Campbell's ships, and it was then that Bligh received a letter from Fletcher Christian. They'd sailed together twice, they were close friends, and nobody knows the reason that they actually fell out. But there's no question, once Christian was determined on the course of mutiny, something that grew over a period, and again, as I say, the history of it, though seen in many films that I reenact, scenes from some of the films, the legend is one thing. What actually happened, there's so many gaps to fill, but it is an absolutely fascinating story of the high seas, and of course also the other setting, Tahiti and Pitcairn, extraordinary.
It just ties in, Professor Scott Davidson and all sorts of other wonderful things as well. Anyway, let's move on to Leonardo DiCaprio and The Revenant, Richard.
Revenant is a visible ghost or animated corpse believed to return from the grave to terrorize the living. And no question that the wilderness, the American wilderness, it's set in 1823 Montana, directed by Alexandro Gonzalez Inarritu. And it is inspired by the experiences of the frontiersman and fur trapper Hugh Glass, played by DiCaprio. And it's an extraordinary film, visually. Atmosphere is amazing. I raised, and we mentioned it yesterday, the question as to whether or not individuals would wish to see the extraordinary scenes here. Some of them are very harrowing, about the survival of an individual in circumstances that appear impossible. The film is opening nearly 4,000 cinemas tomorrow in the United States, so we'll certainly find out. And it's the original, the initial scene of the set when the part of a semi-military party are hunting for pelts. The Native Americans ambush them. Many are killed, and Hugh Glass, played by DiCaprio, is among those who escapes, but subsequently he's savaged in an unforgettable scene. Extraordinary how this was filmed, by a bear. He's seriously injured. They have to carry him on a stretcher and eventually decide to leave him behind. Fitzgerald, played by Tom Hardy, expect him in the BAFTA nominations list. Wants Glass dead and decides to offer to stay behind to guard him and look after him. That is not what he intends to do, and the facts are that this is a story of an individual left for dead who is able to return in circumstances that are quite extraordinary. I mean, there's one scene he actually hides in a, because of the bitter cold, in the carcass of a horse. There are extraordinary sequences where we see the exploitation of...
Didn't Han Solo do that on Luke Skywalker in Empire Strikes Back? I think it was Luke Skywalker, actually.
You're right. That would be quite an interesting take, I have to say. It's the realism of this film. It's the absolute extraordinary scenes where the atmosphere of a forest, for example, where you're walking in a forest and you believe there may be hostiles in the area and you can't find out when every noise, every sound. I mean, what Iñárritu's done, and Emmanuel Lubezki deserves credit for the photography here, is make such an atmospheric film. That's why it may very well be, why I think it'll be up against Spotlight, which is the brilliant docudrama about the investigation by the Boston Globe into abuse in Boston of children by Catholic priests. The two films will probably go head-to-head. There's an amazing performance by Tom Hardy as Fitzgerald, who is the villain, and it's harsh viewing, but it is a truly remarkable film, and this is DiCaprio's attempt to another one to get an Oscar. Which
he'll succeed one day. He's just got to keep at it.
It all sounds a bit scary to me.
It is extremely scary, and it's also the realism of some of these scenes, which leads me to ask, I'll be fascinated to see how well it does. But it is a remarkable film. What we see is brilliantly shot, superbly acted, and the tension is sustained throughout. There are also a party of French frontiersmen who kidnap the daughter of one of the Native American chiefs, and the fact that he is trailed, Glass is trailed by the Native Americans, and there's also a scene where he escapes in by diving into water. I mean,
on the other hand, if you want to be a bit more positive, just focus on the work of Jennifer Lawrence in Joy.
Ah, now that is indeed a very, very different movie. Do you enjoy David O. Russell's movies? We've got to ask this question, because for me, his films with Silver Linings Playbook, had American Hustle, he uses the same cast, Bradley Cooper, Robert De Niro, I have to say, almost above all, because she's positively luminous in this, Jennifer Lawrence. I find them appealing, I enjoy them, but I do find them a little bit superficial. I just wondered...
Jennifer Lawrence, superficial, after Katniss Everdeen and Mystique in the X-Men.
Oh, that's a bit harsh.
Her superficial, that was...
I mean, it's a film about a woman who makes a mop, though. I mean, that's what I don't get. I mean, you know, you've got Star Wars, you've got that really deep Western that you were just talking about. There are so many real things going on in the world. How can a film about a woman who makes a mop be worth watching?
Well, the answer is perfectly easily if you leave it in the hands of somebody, very accomplished performers. The facts are she's a divorced mother of two. She's working as a booking clerk. She's living with two children. Her mother, who is addicted to soaps and does absolutely nothing, never leaves the bedroom. Her grandmother, who is supportive. Her father is starting to date Trudy, a wealthy Italian widow, and from that springs a day on Trudy's boat.
Sounds like a bit of a cross between Erin Brockovich and Charlie in the Chocolate Factory, where he's got his grandparents in the bed and they won't get up.
It's extreme, Elliot.
The house ex husband too, but the facts are that when she cuts her hand, when wringing the mop, this leads her to this rather remarkable invention. And there's Absolutely no, no question that it is a very enjoyable film. How you manufacture mops, how you get the parts, how you pay royalties to somebody who's...
Do we have miracle mops in the UK, though? Is it just an American thing? Because I've never heard of a miracle mop.
Well, I think I've seen them advertised at various country shows up and down the country at various other times.
Well, the miracle mop, it was something that Joy Mangano actually managed to... invent and also sell on television. Here is the
not to be confused, of course, with Mrs. Mop and Can I Do You Now, Sir?
There's a certain drama and tension in this movie because Neil Walker, who is the executive who arranges product celebrities to sell products on television, there's a hilarious appearance by Melissa Rivers, who's the daughter of Joan, playing her mother. That's very funny. But how do you sell a miracle mop on television, and you have a telethon because those who phone in want to buy. This is where it takes off. And I do have to say that, I mean, it's a likable movie. Yes, it's a curious subject, but it is a biopic that works because of Jennifer Lawrence. She's by turns feisty. She's vulnerable. Everything is against her, and this is the ideal. We follow the American dream because the miracle mop takes off, becomes an enormous success, that which you cannot do without. And it's one of those movies that, well, much of the movie, I have to say, especially the dysfunctional family, is pretty forgettable. But Jennifer Lawrence, she'll be nominated and win, or she is nominated, she will win the Golden Globe in the comedy musical category for Joy. And she is extraordinarily good. I mean, she carried almost single-handedly, I thought, she carried the Hunger Games franchise, a brilliant idea that was commercially exploited. I mean, you had the Mockingjay part.
Oh, the Hunger Games is brilliant. I mean, it's absolute literature. I think it's the modern Lord of the Rings in so many ways. Alex is making faces at me.
I think when you bear in mind it was lifted from a Japanese idea called Battle Royale, he's done very well, really. But other than that, yes. Yeah,
it's very well written, though. It's a super book, and I think anything that gets young people reading and away from their tablets and computers.
Exactly. Unless, of course, they're reading it on their tablets and computers.
The outrageous commercialization of the last two parts, Mockingjay parts.
Oh, shocking. Absolutely shocking. It should never have been split into two films.
No, it should not have. And
wasn't it a cop-out at the end that she's just sort of seeing in the nice gingham dress, basically sort of saying, I won't let this happen to you again, etc. I think it was what brought on my festive cold.
It's a very girl power movie, though, isn't it? Every single character is...
If you see the movie about the invention of the magic mop, it is an extraordinarily likeable, and pretty forgettable in some ways, but... It's one of David O. Russell's movies, which...
And it's got Bradley Cooper in as well.
Well, I'm sure it's very good, but a little bit of me cringes inside at the thought that you would want to go and see a film that's about QVC, and I know there are other shopping channels available, but that can't... I mean, I wouldn't even watch QVC on the television.
You wait to see, firstly, when a celebrity tries to sell them up who doesn't use it properly, so, of course, there's no interest. And then, well, it's only up to Joy to... persuade her, the executive, good performance by Bradley Cooper, to allow her to demonstrate it, that there is real luck.
And that is the whole QVC magic, as indeed Henny Penny and her hen houses has regularly demonstrated. Richard, time is beating us once again. We're going to have to hold fire on a couple of the other things, including that royal engagement that I know you are keen to actually progress. But just hold for the second, and we'll be with you again in a week's time. Assuming, of course, you've had a reasonably interesting telephonic link with us today.
Yes, I have indeed.
And you'll be back with us again in 168 hours or so from now.
Good Lord, you count the hours.
Goodbye, Richard.
Goodbye. It's been lovely chatting.
If not for you, babe, I couldn't even find the time. If not for you.
Quite right, too. 8:43 now. Good heavens. Nearly 17 minutes to 9 o'clock as we scoot through the whole world experience and say Happy New Year. Ian Lennox, how are you, Ian?
Hi, Alex. Happy New Year to you as well.
Oh, come on, cheer up. I mean, we know that obviously you're up in Newcastle and it's always grim up north, but, you know, at the end of the day, you know, we're just about to find out from the legend that is Director of Communications at the University of Lincoln, that would be Ellie Sample.
Hello.
What are the dates of the applicant open days that are actually coming up, where if you're fortunate enough to actually be, in possession of an offer, possibly, from the University of Lincoln to study one of our many, many and varied courses, I could shamelessly plug journalism, public relations and English, but you know what other courses are available.
Chemistry, physics,
exactly,
pharmacy.
Exactly. Would you like to just share, Ellie, with the world these applicant open day things?
Oh, thank you, Alex. Yes, if you actually are holding an offer, and I know that there are thousands and thousands of students out there who are looking forward to coming to the University of Lincoln this September, then you will have received a letter from us inviting you to come to one of our applicant days. There's a whole range coming up. You can select the one that most suits you, and we'll look forward to welcoming you. And you can get a little taste of what it's like to be a student here at the University of Lincoln and what the Lincoln experience is and how we're different, and find out about things like our student as producer activity, some of the research that we're engaged in here, which is changing the world, and also just get a feel for meeting some of our lovely academics like Alex.
Well, there we are, you see. And one has to say, inevitably, go with your intuition. I always used to say this when I'm sort of on frontline duties at open days, etc. Ultimately, sort through it. Take the tummy test. If it feels good, go with it. If it doesn't, then don't.
Exactly. It's like buying a house, I think. You walk in and you either feel comfortable and you know this is where you want to spend the next 3 or 4 years of your life, or it doesn't feel right, and it's really important to find the right university for you, which is why attending the applicant open days is really, really important if you possibly can.
And I'm sure, Ian, bearing in mind and indeed wearing your hat when you used to be at the University of Sunderland, you would endorse what's just been said.
Indeed I would, yes. There's a certain ambience about buildings and things, among other things, but I think it's the staff that you meet that's the most important thing.
Very much.
And how you're going to relate to them. Do the students' parents come to these functions, or just
the students' parents come, and what we do is some of the day the students and parents do together, and then parts of the day the parents have their own separate section. But
that's a good idea.
We try and give the parents a feel for what the academic environment is like, and that can be quite fun as well, to go back and actually be part of a class with your son or daughter. I did it with my son a couple of years ago, and he's now at the University of Lincoln. But it was super fun, although he went to the wrong class. Which is quite funny.
It just adds to the whole scenario. That's the important thing.
Yes, I wouldn't put that in his CV.
No, he's doing very well now, though.
We celebrate and rejoice. That's the important thing. So, Ian, thankfully, up at Newcastle, you managed to evade most of the floods, obviously, in the other part of the north. Cumbria didn't, and indeed parts of Yorkshire didn't from that point
of view. Yeah, but it's been raining here for 5 days. Solid, or was, anyway. I had a lodger come in. I didn't dare put him on top of the house in case the roof was leaking.
Good heavens.
Oh, my goodness.
It was really, really just poured down.
Is it getting any better there, Ian?
Oh, it's better now, but it's still cloudy and horrible and gloomy. I'm beginning to hate the English winters. When I was a boy, we at least got some snow. Nowadays, well, if we do get snow, it lasts a couple of days and it gets slush. So I don't know.
Although we did get really good snow about 3 years ago, because I remember, because we had to close the university for a couple of days.
Oh, right.
It was fantastic. I built a snowman and...
it could have been the last hurrah, Helly. It could have been the last hurrah.
Yeah, the last snowman.
There's
a title of a book in there somewhere. Yeah.
Frosty has not got that magic anymore. He's just gone to actually be replaced by...
I think we're still going to see snow this year. I mean, remember, in the past, we have had snow through till March, and even later at times. And if you remember, there have been so many berries on the bushes this year, and I always think that's a sign that it's going to be a snowy winter.
Oh, really?
Yeah.
Oh, right. Well, I once built, about 25 years ago, I built my kids a sledge, huge sledge, like a bus, with wheels on it. And they've got a town where there's a big, big slope on it. And the idea was to take them, you know, each winter. It didn't snow for 15 years.
Oh, no. That was the curse of the sledge.
Clearly, there is a message there, Ian. Ian, we're going to find out what your
thoughts... Yes, I'm going to build another sledge. It'll be...
We're going to find out what your thoughts are on making a change. We're going to share with the world Professor Richard Wiseman's top five tips for making a change. It might be a change of direction for Newcastle United, but I won't talk any more about football after the... it's only half-time in the Capital One Cup semi-final. That's all.
Oh, yeah, I saw that last night. Everton are quite a good side, aren't they?
Yeah, thank you. But it is time for Janine Barry, who is the selection that is not necessarily from Cameron Tilbury this week, but it's another one of our country artists. And are you ready to have a listen to Janine Barry with her version of Carousel, Ian Lennox?
Yes, I am.